Social programs provide an important safety net for families that are scraping by. But millions of people in Latin America make their livings in the informal sector.
Our social security systems are very dysfunctional in the sense that even though in the written law they provide reasonable security for people, there's a very large fraction of the population that is actually not being covered by those provisions.
For this third episode of our special collaborative podcast series with the International Economic Association, we go to Colombia, where Marcela Eslava's research is prompting Latin American governments to rethink social policy.
I think what we need to start discussing is how we can redesign labor protection and social security protection such that it covers people not based on whether they're formal or informally employed, but based on the risks that they're facing. Health should come in when you get sick, not when you get sick and you are formally employed.
Other episodes in the series feature Turkish economist İpek İlkaracan on the power of investing in the care economy, and Kenya's Rose Ngugi, who is empowering local governments by providing data. IMF podcast contributor Rhoda Metcalf spoke with all three of these innovators. This episode features Marcela Eslava, who is professor of economics at the University de los Andes and president of the Latin American and Caribbean Economic Association.
Can you start off by telling us what drives your research? What are the basic questions you're asking?
So almost all of my research has, in some way or another, addressed the question of what are the roots of what I call the Latin American development problem, which in a nutshell, I think, has two angles to it. One is low income, low GDP per capita. The other is very high inequality.
Right.
And I believe both share the same roots. They're very tightly linked. Part of it is I've lived in Latin America my whole life, and this is the reality we face every day.
Sure.
It has important implications for the people that surround you. You see poverty, you see social unrest and discontent. And I think that very naturally motivates you to ask those questions, and that was my case.
So in your most recent work, I know you've been looking at Latin America's informal economy, which is a pretty significant part of the economy. So let me talk about workers who are part of the informal sector. These are people who are really cut off from any economic security, right?
That is right. Informality is actually a kind of difficult concept because it has many dimensions. And so one sort of general definition of informality that people use is a person who is not contributing to Social Security in a way that will secure a pension. So then you would indeed, as you were saying, find that Latin America has huge informality. Around 50% of the workers do not contribute to their pension.
Right.
Those workers are typically also out of other forms of protection. For instance, many of those workers earn incomes that are below the minimum wage. And so in that sense, the minimum wage is not very minimum in the economy. And they also frequently are not, you know, contributing to health in the countries where their health is tied to their contributions, etc. So that's a very worrisome phenomenon in Latin America, closely linked to poverty as well. People in poverty are typically working informally. They're what you could call the survival entrepreneurs.
Right. So you're looking at, you know, people who are earning very little wage, and as they get older, if they get sick, anything happens to them, there's no money coming in. There's nothing to back them up.
Exactly. So our social security systems are very dysfunctional in the sense that even though in the written law they provide reasonable security for people, there's a very large fraction of the population that is actually not being covered by those provisions.
And you point out that one of the issues is the minimum wage. So how does the minimum wage fit into that?
It's in general the question of whether the sign that we give to labor protection slash social protection is feasible with the environment, the productive environment that we have.
So what you're saying is that the minimum wages are perhaps not realistic relative to the economy.
The minimum wages may not be realistic. The package of minimum wage plus social security contributions that an employer would have to pay for their workers may not be realistic for many of the workers in Latin America to actually be hired as formal workers. Of course, minimum wages are there for a good reason. Of course, contributions sure. for Social Security are there for a good reason. The reason is to provide security to workers and to provide reasonable livings and reasonable protection to workers. The problem is that when you design those protections in a way that is not feasible for the institutions, organizations, or people who would have to afford them, then you end up with even less protection than what you wanted.
So because you leave a lot of people out because
exactly.
it's just unaffordable.
So let me give you one example that may be useful for understanding. If you look at the household survey in Colombia, for instance, then you will find that there is a good fraction of people that earns, for Colombians, it's 500,000 pesos, but you can think about 500. The minimum wage in Colombia is 1,300. So a lot of people is making 500, but you would have to pay them as an employer 1,300.
Right.
And the fact that people are making 500, not employed by anyone, so this is not exploitation. This is what they are earning on themselves.
So self-employed.
Self-employed, exactly.
Right.
So those people, it would be very hard for those people to find a job with much higher wage. Not only that, but the employer would have to pay that $1,300 topped off with a subsidy for transportation. And then on top of that, something that would be close to increasing that by 50% through the different contributions that this employer has to make for Social Security, but also other contributions that are not directly benefiting the person, but you know, that are subsidies for other activities. And so that kind of design implies that this group of people is unlikely to jump from informality to formality. Right. And when they do, because some transitions occur, they are unlikely to hold on to those formal jobs.
Because they're just too expensive.
Exactly. And so, of course, the very hard question is, what can you do? Because mm-hmm. given that these provisions are important to protect workers, it's not simply a matter of saying, well, then let's not have a minimum wage or, you know, right. let's not have contributions that we need to pay for the services. So I guess the kind of discussion that I think needs to arise in Latin America is one that asks how to redesign these systems in a way that is compatible with our situation.
Right. So what kind of solutions could you bring to this?
Of course, the best solution is to be more productive to start with.
Right.
Making people more able to be an employee at a business that's more productive and that, you know, that can achieve some scale.
So we're talking education?
Talking education with lots of rings and bells. So it's not only increasing coverage, which, by the way, in many countries in Latin America is high in primary education, is not so bad in secondary education. And it's not great, but it is not as terrible as it used to in, you know, tertiary education. So you still need to bring up coverage, but you definitely need to improve quality and think about the kinds of abilities that people are missing the most. But that's going to take a long time. And so that means we also need to work on the side of costs.
Right.
And in that side, I think what we need to start discussing in my research right now is trying to evaluate different options is how we can redesign labor protection and social security protection such that we have it that it covers people not based on whether they're formal or informally employed, but based on the risks that they're facing. Health should come in when you get sick, not when you get sick and you are formally employed. But you still need to fund that, so you need to finance it. And so we need to rethink the way in which we finance social protection. And that means a whole new conception of the vision of taxes and contributions that the governments raise.
Are the governments in Latin America, is the government in Colombia, are they open to the kind of research that you do? Are they willing to take in that information and adapt it into their public policy?
That depends a lot on the country and the political times.
Right.
And some of these discussions are very difficult to bring. They're unpopular. So any talk of minimum wage has lots of people who would rather not change that system. So if you think about the kind of economic arrangement that I described, then what you have is not the typical, you know, worker capitalist divide to deal with, but you actually have that divide plus a very, very large fraction of people who are not the typical worker. Many of them are, as I described, self-employed. To just give you a sense, over 40% of Colombian workers are self-employed, around 35% in the region. And so that's a third group that's very important. And that there's also a group of workers that's also relatively large, you know, in the 20s or 30%, who are salaried workers, but they're not formalized. Those workers are not benefited by the minimum wage. But you also have this very large mass of workers who are formalized, who benefit from the current arrangement.
So do you think that ultimately to get a lot more people out of informality and plugged into these social security programs, the countries are going to have to lower their minimum wages?
I don't think that's even feasible politically. But I do think that rethinking minimum wages such that they are differential depending on the conditions of the worker. So how about we think of systems where the minimum wage, for instance, starts a little lower for people who are just coming in to the labor market for their first job? How about we think about systems where rather than handing direct subsidies to firms, unconditional, the government pays part of the minimum wage that the worker needs. That's the kind of thing that I think we can discuss.
Do you think that being a local economist, so somebody who studies the Latin American economy while living in Latin America, do you think that's advantageous or gives you a different perspective on things, you know, compared to economists who study Latin America from a distance?
In many angles, it is, yes. Obviously, for the kind of work that I do, some, you know, databases are confidential and have to be used on site. So that's one advantage. My daily life feeds me with questions because I see the problems around me. The economists who are based in the region, I think undoubtedly we talk more to the policymakers in the region. I think we undoubtedly have more at stake and greater interest to engage with the multilaterals, with the governments, with the civil society in the region. And so I do think that it is very important in Latin America that we develop a network of people who work in the region, who interact with people who work outside the region. I'm not, championing a campaign for these problems to be looked at only by people based in the region. I don't think that's useful. I think that would miss a lot of good cross-fertilization. That is absolutely crucial. But on the other hand, I also believe that it is very important for the region to build a strong network of people who look at the problems from the region with technical capabilities. And that has been one of the angles that I have wanted to give my career.
Do you think that the research capacity in Latin America is evolving, is expanding?
In particular in economics, it has expanded very substantially over the past few decades. I think our economic association, let's say, I think has been very important for that, as have other endeavors that other people have taken. We have strong organizations where we interact with each other. ASEA is one, REACH is another one. And I think that's both a reflection that the research capabilities in the region are growing, but also a good engine behind that growth. Governments, some in the region better than others, see that opportunity, and some have developed systems to also support research in their countries. Others have not, and many of the researchers in the region actually rely on funding from abroad to conduct research. So I do think it has grown a lot. I think we are in a great position in the sense that we have some very good researchers working in the region. I also see that retention is harder. Some try, but then go to the US or other places in North America or Europe. And so I do believe that because it's so important, that's an angle in which, you know, the profession and governments should invest more.
Well, Marcela is Slava. I really appreciate you speaking with us today about your research, and I look forward to learning more about Latin America's development challenges through your future work.
Thank you, Rhoda.
Marcela Slava was speaking with Rhoda Metcalf as part of our special collaborative podcast series with the International Economic Association. Look for other episodes featuring Turkish economist İpek İlkaracan and Kenya's Rose Ngugi. Go to imf.org/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards.
And I'm Rhoda Metcalf. Thanks for listening.